Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeta, Evan Basilek, Russell Young, and Sujeet DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information, should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 225, being recorded on the 19th of April, 2018, with special guest Jeremy Hollett. I'm Sujeet, and on Skype with me, I have Evan, Cynthia, and of course, our special guest, Jeremy. And before we get to him, let's just do a quick roundup of all the news. Evan, Cynthia, did you guys file your taxes yet?
Absolutely. Although I was on the road, but I saw it after the fact that there was quote unquote planned maintenance on the RSA.
Did they extend it one more day because of the planned maintenance?
Yes.
They did. They did. And
I think somebody's cheating when they say that it was planned maintenance. I think that's a default error message.
We're unplanned, but They can't tell us that.
You know what I found out, which may have caused this, I don't know what the back end of this is, but PayPal Pro, which is a credit card processor, they scheduled a TLS 1.2 test for this Monday. Tuesday morning, okay?
Yeah.
And essentially, if your website didn't support TLS 1.2, all transactions would fail for 1 hour.
Right.
I'm just wondering if that somehow filtered back and broke things. But it was just coincidental that they had it scheduled for that day.
I can just imagine that there are multiple cloud providers' sales teams that are just like aching to get into their IRS. Yeah. Customers and say, you really think you should try this cloud thing.
Anyways, so let's do a quick round up on the news. And Evan, you put a whole lot of stuff in there. Thank you.
You can see it's right. You're starting to see as we're getting close to build, right? You know, all the different component teams are starting to ship some things. So it's going to be a super busy couple of weeks. The couple ones that I wanted to call out were, some new support for JavaScript UDFs and geospatial stuff in Stream Analytics, mm-hmm. right, which is really enhancing the capabilities there. The other one is, and I had to actually go figure out what this meant because the operationalizing Azure Databricks notebooks didn't mean anything to me. But I went and looked, and really what we're talking about is now that you can leverage the functionality of Databricks notebooks in Azure Data Factory. Right.
Yeah.
So again, the ability to kind of run them on a scheduled basis against, data that's coming in, just like you do all your other data factory jobs.
Correct. You could just input, this is the Spark connector, right?
Yeah.
Databricks is our Spark solution. And so if you're doing, if you want to include that as part of your data flow, you can now do that with Azure Data Factory, which I think is very cool.
Yep.
What about you, Cynthia? Is there anything that you like in here?
Yeah, I'm actually reading about a lot of new information about Service Fabric. Mm. So now I'm reading that Service Fabric on Red Hat Enterprise clusters are now available in public preview. So customers are now able to deploy Service Fabric on Red Hat Enterprise Linux platform, which previously was only available on Ubuntu.
Right,
and
right.
And also start deploying .NET Core 2.0 and Java on Linux.
Right. So, wow. More and more Linux platforms. It just never never stops.
And talking about Linux, I'm sure you guys all caught about the news about Azure Sphere. I hope I'm
saying that. I did. I don't quite grasp it yet. But I saw it.
Yeah, and Jeremy, feel free to jump in on any of these topics if you feel passionate about them as we talked about it. But from what I read is that it takes these three factors with IoT devices into account, right? You need a secure operating system. These are all the millions of IoT devices out there. We know from past experience that, for example, webcams have been hacked and converted into basically robots, right, for somebody to command and control them because they were insecure. And so you need that secure operating system. It has to run on a secure chip so nobody can try and put some antivirus software, something, some virus on it, I should say. And then finally, it has to connect to the cloud securely, and so that nobody can take it over. So I think it's nice that all these three things were taken into account. But what's amazing is that we're Microsoft came up with sort of their own version of Linux to make it happen.
Yeah,
It's kind of weird.
it's not our first kernel, and it probably won't be our last,
I'm
right?
sure.
You know,
Yeah.
because some of our FPGA stuff is there's a Linux kernel variant there as well.
The stuff that you run in the back in Azure, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Cool. What else do you guys like over here? Anything else? Go
So
ahead.
I was gonna say the HTTP 2 stuff is starting to land, right? You see that's now available in Azure App Services, right? And this is we can probably have a whole show on this at some point, but this is all about, you know, the biggest thing that HTTP 2 brings is the ability to multiplex your requests within your connections, right? And there's some other kind of new features and everything of HTTP 2, but that's the big one that jumped out at me in terms of a scalability perspective, because creating connections is very expensive, all things being equal. And this takes away some of that overhead on a per request basis.
Agreed. Yeah. How about you? Anything else you want to talk about, Cynthia?
I think that is all for me.
Okay, I've got one that was interesting. We talked about this a while ago. We've got these GPU VMs out here now, and how can they be used for computer-aided design? For so typically, the, you know, CAD. You think of CAD, you think of a very high-power workstation sitting at someone's desk. But now, because you've got all this power on the cloud, these workstations can offload some of the processing to the cloud and still provide you that. You know, that 3D or view or moving an object around and whatnot, right? The stuff that they do in CAD. So this company called Altair that has taken the Azure provided GPU VMs and has created a complete package around it, you know, to make it easy for CAD software to connect into that. So it's good for for schools and everything that want to learn computer design but can't afford all the heavy hardware. Now they don't have to. So it all runs in the cloud on demand.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Anything else you want to cover, Evan, before we
No,
turn the mic over
I
to
think
our
that
guest?
I suspect it'll be fast and furious over the next couple of weeks, so we'll probably fall behind, but we got lots of plans coming up with build, so
Awesome.
I think it'll be busy then.
All right. Well, then, without further ado, let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Jeremy. And I know, Evan, you brought Jeremy onto the show, so thank you for doing that. Jeremy, go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us what you do at Microsoft and what your passion is in the Azure.
Sure. So my name is Jeremy Hollett. I'm a principal engineering manager with the Azure CXP, which is the customer experience team. We're part of the core engineering group in Jason Zander's organization and ultimately part of Scott Guthrie's larger organization. For my group, it's specifically a CRE, customer reliability engineering. And there's a lot to that, but basically, we have some customer-facing things that we do, things like escalation management, things like, you know, we're aware when large customers or large events are going to happen on Azure, and we do the engineering work proactively to make sure they're reliable. So if you think of like NBC hosting the Olympics, different events like that. We also own communications for every Azure outage, so we're the ones that get paged in the middle of the night when Azure goes bump in the night. It's us who are up and on the bridge and making sure we're getting communications out and RCAs, as well as we manage the tweet fleet. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but if you go to add Azure support and ask a question, you are directly talking to the folks in the Azure Command Center. You're talking to the heart of Azure. It's not marketing or any other group. You're actually talking to the people that are part of the Azure core infrastructure team. So we do a lot of customer-facing activities, and we also do DevOps on the platform. And when you think about reliability, and to some extent, we span a little bit into site reliability engineering, which is Google came out with that a couple years ago, and it's really the next evolution of how you operate platforms at a massive scale. You think of reliability as not a byproduct of an operational procedure, but reliability really is a feature of the platform. And how do you actually drive reliability as a tier one feature? So a lot of work going on there. Probably the most exciting thing that we're doing is within CRE and customer reliability engineering is how do we take the concepts of site reliability and the things that we do in terms of making Azure a reliable platform, and then go out and expose those and work and apply those directly to customers. So we're doing a lot of work with customers to drive reliability. And there's a couple reasons why. One of the key ones is, you know, obviously we have a responsibility as a platform provider to make Azure as reliable as we can. And there's work that happens day and night, and we measure it down to, you know, the fourth or fifth nine, which gets you, you know, you're talking about 5 minutes in the course of a year downtime types of measurements where we're trying to get. But having said that, you know, we know there's an extent of reliability we'll get out of the platform. You know, with the cloud, it's not based on the highly redundant hardware. It's really based on software isolation principles is how you really drive the mission critical reliability. So for us is leveraging the software that makes up Azure, understanding the customer's, you know, business and what are their reliability targets, you know, and are they even architected or designed to meet those? Because that's a huge gap customers have. They think they need 4.9 reliability, but when you look, they have, you know, based on the single points of failure, lack of DR, a variety of reasons, really aren't in a way that to hit that target. So a lot of what we do is work with customers as they're through the proof of concept stage and looking to deploy to Azure is understanding, you know, where are the, you know, the holes in the ship, so to speak. Understand what those are. Not everyone can design with 100% resiliency, but you want to know where do you have resiliency gaps, right? And then what are your mitigations going to be if you do run into problems that do expose those resiliency gaps? But ultimately, it really distills down to, you know, us within Microsoft, you know, taking joint accountability for a customer's reliability. It's there's a lot of anxiety as customers come to the cloud, and we're really looking at how do we reduce that anxiety and then help them meet whatever their SLA objectives are. The number of nines they want to achieve, you can get there. You can get to 5 nines if you're designed right, using the, you know, all the best practices. So really, really focused on that. So that's probably the coolest stuff we're doing right now.
Yeah, and Jeremy probably in some ways, right, he understates some of the interactions we have. I mean, to his point, right, this is the team that I work on as well. You know, where we ultimately, when something does go wrong, right, we do get the calls to get them. But, and, you know, obviously that's a huge chunk of what kind of drives us and motivates us as a team. But really the neat part is, right, when the overall Azure ecosystem as a whole doesn't generally fail. Right, there's tons of redundancy within it, you know. But what happens is you find individual failures or failures at individual customer levels. And what our goal in life is to do is to take those lessons learned and then make sure they get translated into the platform. Make sure the platform knowledge gets translated into the customer, and then take individual customer things and then raise them, use them as kind of, no pun intended, but the platforms for driving improvements in the overall Azure world. Right. You know, if we find that customers are repeatedly doing fill in the blank, not wrong, but in a way that the engineering team didn't expect, the component team that owns that area, you know, we turn around and we figure, okay, well, how do we bring the two closer together? Is it educating customers? Is it changing the way the feature works? Or typically it's some combination of both.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. That's a great point, you know, because Azure, unlike a service, it's just building blocks that we put out there and customers use, and they stretch it and weave it together however they want. And a good example of what Evan was just talking about is gaming. Gaming is something that has grown on Azure in the past year. And you know, we really work closely with the gaming companies because their scenarios are just fundamentally different than a lot of the traditional scenarios on Azure. Their sensitivity, it's different than the traditional HA kind of design. You know, if there's a momentary blip, gamers get kicked out of game sessions. So a lot of our work is, one, to go and understand and help those customers be successful via high touch engagement. Then also us becoming kind of the experts on that scenario, that industry vertical, and then driving those improvements in the platform. And speaking of gaming, I mean, just the way that we service the platform, we've driven a lot of insights and changes to the tooling and the underlying infrastructure of how we even think about servicing Azure to meet very specific requirements. And we're seeing that with the different verticals of gaming and connected car and the different things out there. But yeah, ultimately our product is Azure, making it better. But what fuels myself and I think my team is getting a chance to see what customers are doing on Azure. It is so cool, whether it's gaming or connected car or some of the healthcare stuff that's happening. Just you're seeing the startups that have an idea and then leverage Azure, and before you know it, they're a multi-million dollar customer. It's really understanding those scenarios and really driving Azure to meet the customer needs for those.
So give me an example of some of these recommendations that you've been able to take from the Azure space and provide to customers, right, in terms of reliability. Is there maybe a concrete example you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the different scenario. I don't know if I can name customer names.
No, don't say any customer names.
But I would say, I would flip it around, Jeremy. Like, I mean, think about maybe the one that pops to my head is something like Managed Disks. Right.
Yeah.
We're really working, you know, so Managed Disks, for the audience that's not familiar with them, is, you know, traditionally, if you make a VHD in Azure, so the disk for the VMs, you know, you kind of pick the storage account, you create a storage account, create containers, put the VHD in the storage account as a blob, and now you have to manage these, right? And we had lots and lots of cases over the years about people putting too many VHDs in the same storage account. And we had, you know, people that were overloading their storage accounts, or we had even, and I don't remember the specifics of this one, but so it's nobody in the storage team come jump on me, but it was something like we used the first, you know, 7 characters of a storage account name to kind of decide where to lay it out. So if you have some sort of naming convention where your first, you know, 5, 6, or 7 characters are always the same, then you're not really as spread out across the infrastructure as we expect. And so, you know, we learned that stuff over time, you know, working with customers who ran into trouble, and that helped kind of change the platform to now we have Managed Disks, where you don't have to worry about those disks at all, right? You just say, I want a disk, and Azure manages where it is, and you know, you still have to manage your IOPS, but you don't need to worry about the storage account, manage the naming, manage the storage account. And now when you build a VM with that, right, you lose all that potential mistakes that you can make creating these, we make go away. And so what our team leads, you know, is helping to get customers off of non-managed disks and onto managed disks, working with those big customers. And so that kind of comes full circle, right? So we ran into the problem, helped figure out what the ultimate plan was to be, and then help push that plan out so that ultimately customers are more successful because using the platform now, what we've designed it to do and what customers are doing kind of are in sync, right, instead of in conflict.
Yes, it's now a native part of the cloud. And the way that we, you know, obviously our number one goal when it comes to Azure and reliability is to prevent any type of outage. That's our number one goal. But things will happen. And so really what we really try to do is limit the blast radius of any any event. And usually outages come from change or any change of state in the environment. And so the way that we service the underlying platform is we do it in the smallest possible units as possible. You know, scale units is what we call them, and that's how we do it. And then based on health checks, we determine, you know, can we expand whatever, you know, change or deployment. And really now building this topology on top of it, you know, first with HA, then with managed disks, where customers are spread across. So the likelihood of them having impact from any type of infrastructure event is greatly minimized. And so we get to a place where, you know, we have an event, it's on a single scale unit and a catastrophe for customers. Well, by getting things out like managed disks and others, is that we can have that event and it's a non-event for the customers. They don't care. They don't have to infrastructure event, but they're striped across our environment in a way that they're completely resilient to anything along those lines. Kind of a great example of bringing it full circle and just making it a native part of the cloud.
That's very cool. Yes. You know, tell me how, what should customers do, like, you know, to help themselves first, right? I mean, I know that you guys can't obviously go out and help everybody. So how can customers?
Jeremy tries. He tries, though.
I'm sure he does. But what are some of the kind of low-hanging fruit things that they can do to, you know, so that you don't have to come after them after some period of time?
I mean, the key thing is understand what are your reliability targets and look at your topology and look at your HA design, look at your whether you use managed disk, and then understand your single points of failure. That's a key one, is really understanding those, and then where are your vulnerabilities, whether it's you know, DDoS protection and what you have there. And then another key one that we're really trying to put is one of the things, the advancements we've made in communications is, you know, we've really, you know, matured how we communicate when things do go wrong. I think many people are familiar with our service health dashboard, where we say, is Azure healthy or not? Our dashboard is designed in a way that it's a regional right? And so we'll say, you know, this region is impacted. Well, in reality, again, based on our principles of how we service the platform, we don't have regional events. An outage usually is a single scale unit, which is 0.11 of a percent of a region. And so we've really driven in targeted communications where if we have an infrastructure event, we can communicate to customers. And we've optimized that through, you know, doing portal notifications and other things. But obviously, that doesn't help customers. They're not going to go to the portal to understand what's happening with Azure. So one of the things that we really recommend customers to do is use Azure Monitor to consume those alerts. And so they can get an alert that says there's something happening with the Azure infrastructure that they can correlate with whatever application level alerts and then do that immediate detection. Okay, this is why we're having this issue. And so that's one of the things we're really trying to evangelize is leverage the Azure Monitor so that you get the telemetry right from us on the underlying infrastructure of your application.
Yeah, so actually, Cynthia, you want to say something? Go ahead.
I had a question. So, I mean, how does your team handle all the different nines the customers are trying to get? Like, the underlying infrastructure, how do you differentiate one that has more nines in their SLA versus one that has less nines?
We don't differentiate. I mean, it's what we try to do is make it, you know, the great thing about Azure is, you know, if you think about the traditional data center, it's a gold-plated data center, right? Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, five levels of redundancy at every level, right? And while that's good, everything's expensive. Running a single test VM there is expensive. And so with Azure, and the way that we've architected it is, you know, if you want to run a single VM for your dev box, it's cheap. That's very cheap. And we actually guarantee we're the only one that gives an SLA on a single instance. We'll say we'll give you a 99.9 SLA, right? And then if you say, okay, I need 2 to 3 nines, then you have to go HA, right? And that's going to cost you a little more money and a little more architecture when you get 2 to 3 nines. And then you want to get to 4 nines. That's where you start thinking about, okay, manage disks. Now I have to get fully isolated, not only at the VM level, but I need to isolate myself down to the storage level. And you get to the 4 nines. And then if you say, look, I can't take downtime. I simply can't. That's where if you look at, I think there's 8 or 9 regions in the world where we have, you know, in-country disaster recovery, meaning we have 2 different data centers across like Japan, East and West, where you can deploy in 2 different regions, use a traffic manager. And that way you're protected even against a, you know, whether it's an act of God, a, you know, a disaster, whatever it is, you're fully protected. So really what we've tried to do is think kind of a menu item is if it's a dev box and your cost is your key point, go single VM and get 99.9. Now, we actually see that we generally deliver more in the 4 nines, even for single VMs, but that's what our SLA is. But, you know, as you decide, you know, what it's like security for your house, it's the more, you know, you want to invest, the more protected you'll be. And we see that customers that use a fully optimized designs can hit the 5, 6 nines availability, which is, you know, really, really good. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so essentially the more granular that you're getting, the more nines you'll be getting because then you're more spread out in terms of risk. Is that a correct understanding?
Exactly. You're spreading out more resources across more surface area that if any particular piece of surface area fails, it's a benign impact to your application. That's exactly it.
The other thing, Jeremy, that I wanted to raise, because I think this is, you know, you and I have known each other for, golly, it's probably been close to 10 years or something now, you know, kind of on opposite sides of the fence working together on these kinds of escalations and the like. But I think the part of the reason that attracted me recently to jump over the fence and start working with you directly was, you know, CXP as an organization sits kind of at the same table as the rest of the engineering component teams, you know, storage and compute and networking and you know, data and all those different ones. The customer experience team sits at that table at the same exact level as the rest of them, and we can represent that customer stuff. Is that kind of what originally attracted you to this space as well?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we wanted to do is, and it came along the same time as we spun up our SRE org is, like I said, we didn't want reliability to be an operational byproduct. We wanted to say reliability is a first-class feature of the platform, and that's where we spun up our site reliability engineering team. And it's really the same with the customer experience team. Is we want that to be a feature of the platform, not a byproduct. It's not a secondary concern, but it's front and foremost as a feature of the platform. So, you know, if you think about, you know, the customer experience, whether it's the software you interact with, Azure Advisor, Resource Health Check, things like that, or it's the experience that you get when things do go wrong, we want that to be a first-class feature of the platform. And that's exactly it, is at the table with all the component teams, making sure that you know, we're thinking of the customer experience first and foremost as a prioritization and not a byproduct of second and third level decisions. That's exactly it. And, you know, obviously, as anyone knows, you know, Scott Guthrie is customer fanatic. He's a developer at heart, so he really appreciates the persona of who our customers are. Our customers are developers, so he understands that persona, and he prioritizes that above everything else. And to the extent of even let's cause ourselves pain, if we can save any terms of negative experience or down minutes for customers, let's us eat the pain, right? And that's one of our core philosophies.
Yeah,
that's why Evan gets a call at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I was going to say that Scott never ceases to amaze me because, you know, I was going back, I was on the road the last couple of days and going back through my email, and there's an email from 1 o'clock Pacific time, 1 a.m. Pacific time from Scott to an escalation area saying, hey, this customer reached out to me and this customer needs help, right? I mean, this is our CVP at 1 a.m. his time responding to a customer, right? That's pretty fanatical at that point.
I've seen him respond to like individual network engineers at my customer. Just saying, oh yeah, is this working now? I wanted to ask a question about whether you guys encourage customers doing chaos testing to shake out their Azure infrastructure, or do you think you guys do it enough that the customers don't have to do it?
No, definitely encourage customers because you know there's that seam between the platform and their application, right? And I think doing some of the chaos type of stuff is always recommended to shake that out, and it helps you really identify, you know, again, finding out where you got to know every weld in your ship. It's mm-hmm. key that you know that, and where are your weak points that you have, because that's the only way that you can thoughtfully go after and address them. Reliability isn't just a one thing. It's looking at the thousand things that make up your topology and really understanding, okay, where are all my single points of failure? Then can you get any confidence that you're adding the right level of resiliency and protection against unplanned events. So definitely a recommendation. Well, you know, obviously we do that from the platform side, but the customer who takes the platform plus their app stack definitely needs to take that on as well.
Too. Okay. And then the other thing I had was you mentioned about analyzing the telemetry coming in from Azure Monitor. So one of the things that I've been trying to do for my customer is to build a more like an artificial intelligence, like a machine learning system that can analyze this data that's coming in, right, and apply a model to it such that it can highlight that, hey, you know, the system's about to fail, or system has failed and you need to do something about it, which, you know, could have happened in the middle of the night, for example. Have you guys considered done any of that, and are there any models that you would recommend that customers use?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple. One is, and I could actually tie this together, and I do have to go soon, but I'll tie this together. It's one of the things that we've looked at is, as I mentioned, hardware is going to fail. We know that, right? And what we've done within Azure is we've invested a lot of machine learning to predict when hardware is going to fail. Because when a piece of hardware fails, essentially the customer's VM then is reprovisioned to a new piece of infrastructure. And that's not a great experience. And so given the size of our fleet, if you think about our 100-plus data centers, you think of all the hardware in there, we have a massive amount of telemetry. So what we've done is we've applied machine learning to the point where we can predict when hardware is going to fail. And once we do predict hardware is going to fail, what we do is we'll actually surface an in-VM message to the customer that says, you know, you're basically going to be, we use a live migration technology, you're going to be moved to a new host mm-hmm. in 15 minutes. And then that can cause a brief pause. But a customer then can consume that and make a decision. Do I close my connections? What's the app level stuff I need to do based on what the Azure infrastructure is telling me it's going to do to make sure I stay on reliable underlying infrastructure? And so that's the scheduled VM events is kind of a byproduct of us using machine learning to make predictions of when hardware is going to fail. Tell a customer, we think your hardware is going to fail. We're going to move you. here's a 15-minute notice so that you can, it should be seamless to you, but if there's anything at an app level you need to think about and you want to trigger a failover or anything like that, you know, do it, and that should all be done programmatically. You don't want humans looking for those. Happens programmatically, and then they get moved over. And once that happens, then we can just take the vacated host, take it out of rotation, and then figure out what was the hardware issue. So kind of an example that shows the combination of us applying machine learning and telemetry and then surfacing that to a customer then to say, go take an action.
Got it. Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it. So we'll get back to you. Maybe we hope we get you back on another show later. Thanks for your time today. Appreciate that.
Yep.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.